Rebic, Rafa, tira, gol! Rafael Leão, oggi segna Leão, la mia giornata è iniziata così.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up guys, glad to be back. We got Madison. This is 2 weeks in a row we got all three of us.
I know. Are we feeling okay?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Feeling pretty good after two wins.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. Two wins and two clean sheets. I said it on the podcast last week, those of you who remember. I said we'd win twice, and I said we'd get two clean sheets, which seemed like absolute blasphemy at the time, given that we'd conceded seven in the two league games before that. But we got it done, albeit against worse opposition.
And the big news, league leaders.
We are.
Top of the table.
Of the league. Top of the, be nice to be top of the tree heading into Christmas. That would make the thumbnail very easy for that episode. But yeah, we've got a busy one. Two games to recap, two games to preview. Love it. We're in the heart of December when it's always chaotic. We've got injuries to talk about. We've got transfer rumours to talk about. So this is going to be a belter, and no doubt it'll be over an hour again. Sorry, lads. But yeah, we'll start with the Genoa review. Middle of last week, we played Genoa. It always goes a bit to the back of the memory when we've had a game since. But this was, you know, I think, I don't want to say men against boys because I don't want to be disrespectful towards Genoa, who have managed to evade relegation for years now. And I don't know how, because they always seem to be in this same position every season and they get themselves out of it. But yeah, we went to the Marassi, 100 miles south of Milan, and we won 3-0. And it was a pretty efficient performance, I think, is the way that I'd describe it. We kind of got the game pretty much wrapped up before half-time, which was nice. Messias getting himself a brace, which was good to see. Zlatan scoring his second free kick of the season, which I think is as many as Hakan ever scored for us or something like that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's great to see as well. And it was a lovely free kick, I must say. And it, an awful opponent as well, but one that were very wounded, as we talked about in the preview. They were missing eight players. They were missing their three top scorers. They never really troubled us, to be honest, apart from Maignan making a save from a set piece and then that backpedaling one. It was just I think it was a job professionally done.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing that we got to touch on real quick, though, is Kjaer going down injured in the first minute. ACL, MCL tear. So his season's over. But besides that, I mean, there really are no bad spots from the game. It was clinical work. I feel bad for Shevchenko taking over arguably the worst team in Serie A. I know they're in 18th and Sorrentina's in 20th, but after watching both those games, I'd definitely say Genoa's worse. And I mean,
they've won less games than Salernitana. They've won one, and Genoa and Salernitana have won twice.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance that Shevchenko gets sacked before they even score a goal, because they've had four games, they've conceded seven, and they haven't scored any yet. And Genoa, that's just what they do. I mean, I know they're under new ownership now, but that is a terrible team to take over as new manager, because you just don't get the time you need to do anything there. I mean, this is a team that's had 12 managers since 2017. That's ridiculous.
Good stat.
Never happened.
Good stat. And often they rehire the same bloke. Baladini back in charge in like a month at this rate. I think the one saving grace that you might have is that there is new ownership, and I think they are determined to try and build a bit of stability moving forward. And Sheva has shown stuff with Ukraine that suggests that he can be that guy. But at the same time, we've seen national team managers struggle to adapt to club football. And maybe that's what might happen here, because the squad that he's inherited has zero balance. They've just got a load of strikers who are names but haven't done anything for a long time. And then they're relying on Destro for all their goals, which is, it's tough. You know, they're lucky that they got Ravella back on loan from Juventus, because he was the one bright spot, I'd say, in their entire performance. And he looks like a talent for the future. But apart from that, there wasn't much opposition. You know, there wasn't much for us to play against. It was a case of once we get that first goal, we're looking pretty good. And the fact that it came early on was a real settler.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were a tad shaky right after the Kjaer injury, because Gabbia came on and then immediately got a yellow card and then immediately committed like two more fouls that he was warned for. So before halftime, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Before halftime, I thought he was going to get sent off. And then it reminds you of the first Atletico game, obviously significantly different caliber of opponents, but you know, a red card that early in the game changes everything, and and that would make us susceptible to any number of counters. So I think Pioli did a great job of taking Gabia off before halftime and putting on Kalulu. Even as a center back, he looked good. I know Florenzi came on at some point as well, and then Kalulu shifted more center, but
Kalulu started, and then he shifted him inside and brought Florenzi on at halftime, and that was a great move. Funnily enough, I think that's the one time that Kalulu has started right center back for us was against Genoa last season when he scored. Yeah. I said after that game that he looked shaky, and then in this game he played very well.
Yeah, definitely. But it takes some balls to use two substitutions on the same player in the first half of the game. Yeah, it does. So props to Pioli because he got it right. It needed to happen. And Gabia is again showing to be the weakest link in our defense, which he doesn't get the game time. So it's to be expected. But this was the game that you really could make a case to say, look, I'm not full match fit, but I'm good enough to play. I mean, it's Genoa. And he just simply wasn't. So I think center back is going to be a necessity in January.
Yeah, and we will come on to that because obviously, as you mentioned, the Kier injury, he had the operation on Friday, was a perfect success, which is good, but like, when is it not? You never seem to see those stories that are like, the surgery was not a success, his knee has come off, or something like that. Yeah. But he had, as you say, work on two ligaments, which means that's it, 6 months out, basically. And I suppose there is none of this, oh, we might make it back in time for the end of the season. He's got the full season and then pre-season to get himself, you know, back up to speed.
Yeah.
Of course, there are obvious questions about whether he will come back the same player. My heart says that, you know, he will because he never relied on tons of pace and mobility anyway. But at the same time, there does have to be a worry that he will be 33, you know, come next season and... Are we now looking for who is going to be his long-term heir 6 months in advance? Probably, and most possibly.
Yeah, I mean, you look at go ahead.
It's going to come down to his mentality, too. Like, if he's scared he's going to get injured again, he's just never going to be the same player. Mm. You know, if he goes out there and isn't scared, then he'll be just fine.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Osimhen from Napoli, broke his orbital bone in his cheek. Like, I guarantee he never goes for a one-on-one header again, you know, 50-50 right. like that. Like, and now is Kier going to take these lunging tackles like he did that caused this? At his age, probably not. And you look at the other players that have had these injuries at that late stage of their career. Zlatan, obvious name that comes to mind, and he made a full recovery, but no disrespect to Kier, but he's not Zlatan, you know? I don't know if he'll be able to recover the same. So time will tell, but we got to get a new center back. Whether we need it or not, we have to do it to be safe.
Yeah, we'll come on to some of the names towards the end that are already circulating. I think there was definitely some hopes that Kier could become like a Chiellini for us, you know? Mm-hmm. Not saying that they're primes, they were anywhere near the
That's another
level,
player who busted his knee and came right back,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and that was kind of the hope, is that he would stay until his late 30s with us and, you know, that he can come back and prove that it's mostly in the mind with him, you know, in terms of his skill sets. He's good with the anticipation, cutting out danger and interceptions, awareness, all that sort of stuff, rather than Tomori, who obviously does have those things, but also has the recovery speed, and that is a large part of his game. So maybe Kier will be suited to coming back, and obviously we wish him the very best in his recovery. And in the meantime, we've got to hope to get through to January fairly unscathed. That's it. I mean, I guess tops and flops for Genoa before we move on.
Before Messias, I say that,
Messias has to be the top. Yeah, absolutely. Scored the first brace away from home since Ronaldinho, I believe, as a Brazilian. So that is good. And I think Mignan was good. He made a couple of good saves as well. I'm looking at the ratings because the game's kind of vanished from my memory already. But I don't think anybody can disagree with Junior being the man.
Agreed. Always has been. That's the guy.
Isaac must be getting ready to pay up at some point.
Two more goals, that's all I need.
Have you mentioned the bet on here before?
If I haven't, I'm going to again. But I bet with Isaac when he signed that he'd score at least 5 goals in all comps. £20 is the wager. He was real confident that Macias wouldn't do anything. So the fact that he's, you know, played less than 200 minutes and he's got three goals is pretty promising for me.
Mm. Yeah. So we're all agreed on the top. The flop is a bit of a difficult one because we weren't tested all over the pitch. You know, there was nobody massively exposed, but it does feel kind of harsh to do this on a 35-minute performance that was very much conditioned by a booking that he got early on. But it's got to be Kabir. Like, he was the only one who looked in any trouble out there. I think this is one where there isn't even any alternative. There was a lot of 6.5, 7 out of 10 performances. It was, you know, pretty routine in the end. It's a 3-0. It was a clean sheet that we really needed. So overall, I think it was just a good job done by the team.
It's got to be Gavir. That's the only option. Yeah. Really.
Salernitana then. So Saturday afternoon, we play Serie A's bottom club. They are struggling big time. I must correct something that we said in the last episode. They had actually changed head coaches at some point this season. It was only after a few games. And I remember actually seeing at the time the coach who had got them promoted, which was Castori, was spotted crying on a bench somewhere near the stadium after he got sacked, you know, because he took them up and it was this big fairy tale.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, and I just wanted to correct that because I had totally forgotten about that when talking about Salernitana. Perhaps bold statement of the episode, I don't remember us playing a team as bad as them for a long, long time. You know, like even Genoa drew two saves out of Mignan that, you know, if that had been Cyprian, you start thinking, could it have been a closer game? Salernitana offered absolutely nothing. Not only that, I mean, I kind of respect that they stuck to their principles in trying to press, but they were so disorganized in doing it that Brahim Diaz will never have an easier game than that, you know, in operating between the lines. They didn't know what to do when they got the ball, and they often lost it in their own third, like when they were trying to play out of our press, and that just wasn't their strength at all. I mean, the tactical analysis is on the website now. You can have a look. I spent most of it ripping into them and saying that they're not equipped for this level, unfortunately. You know, they do have some names in there that you think, like Simi, who was a good signing, or Simon. Yep. And obviously Frank Ribery was the big name from their starting 11. But they're going to need more than that because the midfield's there, the back three, the back five, whatever you want to call it, was all over the place. We moved smartly, don't get me wrong. After Pellegrini's injury, we actually did quite well in terms of rotating the forwards and creating chances through that. We pressed really intensely for all 90 minutes, which I was surprised about because we had the game in hand from 18 minutes onwards. But yeah, as good as we were, they were dross.
Yeah, this was a weird one because, you know, just going down the stats, you look, we had 70% possession. We had 22 shots to their 7. We had 8 shots on target. We had more on target than they had total shots. I mean, we had more shots off target than they had shots. Like, they were awful. And to be honest, we were pretty wasteful with our finishing as well. We really could have been up 10-0. I mean, like, that sounds crazy, but they were just that bad. They did nothing better than us. I mean, I think they conceded less fouls, but that, like, does that even matter? You know, it's not an issue.
It's because they did nothing. It's because they couldn't get near us.
Right, yeah, exactly. I mean, it was a training exercise the whole time, and you could really tell it is Ribery against the world there. And, you know, if he was 10 years younger, maybe it could have been a problem. But you can't expect Ribery at almost 40 years old to do really anything.
Is he 40?
I think he's 38 or 39. 36,
I think, but even still, okay.
I thought he was older.
I feel like the past 3 years, he's just fallen so bad.
Since he left Bayern, it's been awful.
Yeah,
I think he's another one who did his knee ligaments, didn't he?
He did,
probably.
Yeah.
I think last season. Injuries.
I mean, obviously, it was an ACL tear that he had in 2017, so he'll have been in his about the same age as Kier now. And obviously, you're going to bring him in because of the experience that he offers. And he showed at Fiorentina that he can still do a job when he's fit. The problem is he's struggling to stay fit for them. They do have Bonazzoli, who is the centre-forward, who's their top scorer. And I think he's the only one who looks useful, but they didn't get him in the game. There's not too much to say about this one. It was nice work by Liao for the goal. And we should say at this point that Liao's going to be probably out of the Liverpool game because he got a kick at some point in the first half, which was a sore muscle, which has now developed into some kind of muscle strain. So that's not good. But we hope that he'll be back soon. It's not like a tear or anything. And then Pellegrini also pulled up while chasing a ball over the top. So that's not ideal. That was in the 15th minute. So he's going to be looking at probably a month out, and that certainly changes things, I think, ahead of the January transfer window. But yeah, Liao, great work for the first goal to cut it back to Kessier. Kessier essentially played at like the tip of a diamond for most of the game. He was getting forward a lot, and the heat map showed it. And then the second goal was a nice finish from Salamar, because, you know, we've criticised the fact that he hasn't scored yet, or hadn't scored yet so far this season, and that he'd been wasteful, and sometimes he just hadn't even got into the positions to score goals. If there was a game to score in, it was probably this one. And he did it, and he scored with a nice finish on his weak foot. I'll give him the credit for that. And had a good performance overall as well.
Yeah, I mean, he did well. If there's a game for an out-of-form player to do well, and it's absolutely Salernitana. Another little fun fact, Pellegrini's last goal was a year ago that day, and he scored it against Maignan in France. So
hey, that's an
interesting thing there. I fully expected an own goal just to, you know, continue that. But, I mean, am I jumping ahead if I go straight to tops to flops or no?
No, go for it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I know it's super harsh, but I'm still going to give Pellegrini my flop because of all the shit he was saying before the game, how, you know, he's going to leave if he doesn't get game time, he needs to play or whatever. And then he gets his first start and 12 minutes in, he's injured for the, you know, eighth time this season or whatever it may be. Ridiculous. He was the black hole. Like, he was our only striker available outside of Zlatan who we needed to rest because he's played 90 minutes, four games in a row here. And he couldn't even give us a half hour without getting hurt. So we had Krunic as striker. And to be fair, he did just fine. But
False nine. That's his new role, man. He's enjoying it.
He shouldn't have to play that, though. That's my issue. You know, fantastic. He's a utility player. He's doing it better than Barini did. But we shouldn't be in that position with the depth that we have. You know, why is everyone getting hurt? It's annoying.
Pioli actually got asked about the constant muscle problems that we've got, and he said that they're working on it to try and find a solution. He thinks that it's to do with the hectic schedule that we have and the way that we play. But we've got the same as everybody else, and they seem to be in a better state than us. On the Pellegrini thing, I'll first of all say one positive. He was good for the first goal. His movement was smart because he dragged the defender into his own six-yard box with that cutting run that he made, and that freed Kessie up for the shot from where... That's about all that I can say from his performance. He got injured chasing a long ball over the top, and there was no pressure on him or anything, so that doesn't look particularly good. If it's incidental contact or something, you can say, oh, he got a rough one there. But when that happens, and he's got the injury history that he does, you know, he got a big money move to Monaco at the end of the day from Genoa when he was still a kid, and he has not adapted from a physical point of view. He's just getting far too many injury problems. But on that, I think perhaps, right, and I don't mean this on him, but I think it could be a blessing for us because it shows at the exact time that we needed it, you know, a month before January, that we cannot rely on him as a third striker. So it forces us to do a bit of something. Whether that means terminating his loan and then another team gives him a chance or what, I think we need to stop thinking we owe it to players to rehabilitate their careers. You know, sometimes we'll get it right, sometimes we'll get it wrong. But Mandzukic, for example, was a gamble that we took in January and it didn't pay off. You know, he wasn't there, you know, because it's been proven that we don't have the methods, we don't have the resources, whatever you want to call it, to make injury prone players non-injury prone. They keep getting injuries. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever we're doing isn't working. So from now on, it needs to be an absolute base requirement that they can give us 30 games a season, and they've proven they can do it over God knows how long. I mean, that was my argument for signing Belotti, was that he's reliable, but now he's out for 2 months with a torn hamstring. So now it's like, well, we can't sign him because he'll just be aggravated within a week.
I think the idea of signing players who have been injured is because they're cheaper and we're willing to take the gamble. And the gamble's not been paying off.
No, at it all. Hasn't.
That's right. And we can take it with the benefit of hindsight, you know. And I don't want to say that I ever said Pellegrini was a 2 out of 10 signing when he arrived, because I thought, well, as a third choice, it's a really cheap deal. It's so low risk. But actually, I think it was a low economic risk, but quite a high on-field risk, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Because, well, you figure an injury-prone player that's not going to play more than, well, 15 minutes a game, you think, hey, how can you get hurt in 15 minutes? Here we are. So, yeah,
here we are talking about it.
And it's so frustrating, all these muscle injuries, because the first thing I think is their fitness coach, their strength and conditioning coach, is not teaching proper form with lifting. You know, you saw Tomori over the summer. He's doing his rows like
his form was really like bad. Yeah.
That's why you're throwing your shoulder out. That's why you're hurting yourself. So what are you doing with your legs that you're popping hamstrings and knees and calves every day? You know, whatever it is. You got to get someone in there who knows what they're doing.
We've had injury problems since Pato. I feel like, you know, in the past 10, 11 years, it just has not been going our way.
So is our facility, has it not been upgraded since then? Like, what is the issue? Is our equipment bad?
Someone put bad juju on the training facility, man. We got to move.
Yeah.
Does that man play for Chelsea now?
Not currently.
No, that's another point. So that needs to change. I mean, I'm not going to say it again, but there was a guy that I thought that we should have signed over the summer to come in and be the new head of medical, because he was at Inter and he ended up going to Real Madrid, which says a lot. But he kind of left there and was unattached for a while. And I was like, that could be our biggest signing, you know?
Yeah,
it really
could. Yeah, I mean, this injury stuff's frustrating because we're just beating a dead horse that ironically probably became dead by going to Milan Labs. Like, it's so ridiculous how often we get these stupid injuries. Every week we're talking about it. I mean, this morning we wake up to two new injuries, and to be fair, one's the flu, so it's not really an injury, but or cold or whatever it is. But it seems every game day, find out two new players are out. You know, there's just no reason for this every single time.
One thing that we will say is maybe Interan, although Correa's out for a few weeks, but Napoli are maybe starting to find that it's quite hard to sustain a push at the top. I mean, obviously they lost Osimhen to something different, but Anguissa's out with a muscle injury. Koulibaly's out for a muscle injury. Anguissa's backup, Lobotka, just got injured and has a muscle problem. So maybe they're starting to understand now what it takes to play intensely in Europe and to fight for the title. You don't wish any injuries on anybody, obviously, but you know, if we're going to have bad luck, I would like others to have it as well. And I guess we'll see what happens. I mean, Pioli's attitude in the comments he made were very much like, I think from January it'll improve. That's not good enough at this point anymore. Like, we need to hear about some tangible changes that are being made to improve our injury situation, because there are only 6 players who have not had any problems so far this season.
Don't say their names.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to guess them?
No.
Just don't even say anything.
Yeah. For the listeners that want to know, you could Google it. But if we speak it into existence, they're getting hurt.
Well, like, one of them's Andrea Conti, you know, and that's just an example.
Yeah, you can say that.
Yeah, so, but that's just an example, so he doesn't even really count. And one of them's Matteo Gabbia. And it's like, they haven't played enough minutes to be part of it.
And somehow he's been more of a liability than the injured players. I would start Kier on one leg over Gabbia.
Well, let's not, you know.
I mean, we don't need to do that. I don't need Kier to lose his other leg. But...
No, we don't. Right, so top was... your flop was Pellegrini. My top for this game is going to be... It's between Salamakers and Kessié, really. I think they both had bright performances. I'm going to give it to Kessié. I think he was very, very good, very dominant. He covered a huge amount of ground, and he scored a nice goal that set the tone. Hopefully games like that can start to play him back into his best form. But I will give it to him, although I could understand if you gave it to Salamakers because of that nice finish on the weak foot. But I will say as well that I think Florenzi had his best start for us. I thought he was good.
I was going to pick Capitano as well, El Presidente. Romagnoli was captain that game, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, never mind. Then just Presidente or whatever. I think he had a great game, and he did a lot more from the midfield, I think, than Salamakers did, just because of position on the field. You know, he had the ball a lot more. But Salamakers had a great game, and props to him.
I'm going to say Salamakers because he scored his first goal since his renewal. So
That's true. Hopefully it's the confidence boost he needed. Over a year.
First goal in 35 games.
Yeah, it was over a year.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, he's done other stuff. He's created chances.
Right, yeah.
Assists, but yeah.
Yeah.
As a winger, you need some goals.
Flop for me is apart from Pellegrini, if you want to pull him up on that, like he pulled up injured, was fairly straightforward. I thought it was Brahim Diaz. He did some good stuff in facilitating the build-up, and people might think that's harsh because he was buzzing around like you know, his former confident self or the player we know that he can be. But the amount of chances he missed, you know, he had to get a goal in that game. That one in particular where the keeper had already dropped to the floor and for some reason he put it wide of the post. It was tough to watch because that really could have been a statement. You know, every season it seems like there's a team that's in the title race that makes a statement by winning like 6-0 against somebody. You know, Atalanta, for example, have put teams to the sword. I think Inter have won 7-1 a couple of times. And that was a chance for us to do it. We generated enough opportunities, but we were really wasteful, really wasteful. And that's the one frustrating note from the game.
Yeah, I don't think it was that bad, though. I mean, I understand missed a lot of chances, but I thought his creation and I thought it was really well. In fact, I'd say he was a bright note. I think the whole team was fairly wasteful, so I wouldn't hold that against him entirely. But
yeah, I see
where you're coming from.
It was just not because he was a 4 out of 10. It was probably just because he was a 6 out of 10, and that says a lot about how controlling the win was. So that's all good. And it's Champions. Oh, Maddie, have you said your flop?
Pellegrini? I don't know how to say his name, but him.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So two of you agree on that. Champions League time. This is it, boys. Do or die time, I guess. Just like it was against Atletico Madrid, this is a must-win game. It's our final group stage match day, I guess, match day, round, whatever you want to call it. Liverpool at San Siro. Definitely has the flavour of a classic European tie, obviously, with the history between the two sides. I'm not going to say we were unlucky at Anfield, but we had our moments against a Liverpool team that were very fired up in that game. I still think we were dominated overall, and Liverpool did deserve to win. And it pains me to say that because I'm not their biggest fan at all. But, you know, we went 2-1 up and we had the lead going into halftime, but couldn't hold on to it. And we ended up losing to a Jordan Henderson volley that was really nicely taken. They are expected to rotate quite heavily for this game. Klopp said he's going to get smashed by the medical staff if he doesn't rotate players in this game. So I think that's good news. Now, whether certain, I guess, star players like Salah still start, we will find out. And I'm sure that will come between now and when the game happens. We're recording the day before the game. But I guess the bad news for us is that there are just as many injury doubts to potentially offset the fact that they have to rotate. We are by no means anywhere close to full strength. We've got Rebic out. We've got Giroud out. Both of those potentially for another 3 weeks yet. Kier has obviously picked up the season-ending injury. Calabria's out. Leao is now out as well. Pellegrini's out, but, you know, he probably wouldn't have played anyway because Zlatan is fully fit. Although by the time we finish recording, something will have happened to Zlatan, no doubt. Teo Hernandez has got a heavy cold, so... they didn't want to risk him in training on Monday. You know, the risk, I guess, of knackering himself out or whatever. So we better wait and see what happens on that front. There's a chance that our left side, for example, could go from being Teo and Liao to Balotore and Salamakers playing on the other wing, or potentially Krunic. So I don't know. We're going into this again being a little bit of a wounded beast, but the most important man is Ibra for these games, I think, and he is out there, and this will be his first start in the Champions League, so that will be nice. But
hopefully that means we get all 3 points.
Honest, I don't think Zlatan's the best man for this game. I think I don't know what these academy players are going to look like, or third stringers or whatever, so I don't know their ability, but if they play anything like the rest of the team, this is a very high intensity, high pace team that the only reason we were able to score is because Rebic is the same way. Zlatan's not. I mean, he's obviously high intensity. There's no one higher in intensity than him. But as far as pace, he might be a little too slow for them. We're going to have to beat him on the counter, I think. And with Liao out, then that becomes difficult as well. I know, you know, it's become kind of like my role to be the Messias guy, but I genuinely think he's going to be the playmaker here. I think he's going to be doing the most. Diaz is a little weak, so I don't think he's going to be physically strong enough to be creating. He might get one or two off, and absolutely hope so, because he's a fantastic player, but it's going to be tough. Zlatan's just going to have to be kind of camping in the box and hope for something. But Liao is a huge blow. That was one of the creative sparks when we put in the first time. It's going to be rough. It's going to be really tough. This is not the easy game we think it is. Well, no one thinks it's an easy game, but with the third string and the academy players in, it's not going to be as easy. But, I mean, we get the dub, then there's two other scenarios where we go through, a draw or a Atletico win. So we get our business done, then we got to hope for them. It's not in our hands either, so this is going to be a struggle.
It would just be typical, wouldn't it, if we won and Porto won?
Yeah.
I really hope, Max, I do not want to play in the Europa League.
God, it'd be awful.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think it's got to be win or lose, hasn't it, really?
Mm-hmm. Like, hopefully, we're just like, oh, Porto's winning. Let's score an own goal.
Just crash it. You know, to be fair, we probably have a good shout at winning. We probably have a shout at winning the Europa League this year, to be honest.
I don't want the extra 9 games.
Yeah, no, I don't either. But like, also, even if we lose and Porto wins, we're still in third place.
Yeah, that's true.
So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there are a lot of scenarios. The one that we care about is, as you said, AJ, we've got to win. Atletico Madrid and Porto. Well, Porto, Atletico Madrid, it's in Portugal. They've got to draw, or if Atletico Madrid win, they've got to win by the same or a lesser margin of victory than us, because they're in a one worse goal difference at the moment. So that's it. That's as simple as it gets, really. I think, you know, the first game definitely gave indications that we can help them, but the good things sort of came through Rebic and Liao when they started linking up down the left side. So I'm a little bit more pessimistic on that front. It's good. I guess it's encouraging that Klopp said that he's got to rotate, because Liverpool are embroiled in a three-way title race and they've got some pretty crucial fixtures coming up in December. So this is the way that from the second game of the Champions League, we said that it might go, you know, with Liverpool through and us needing a win to give ourselves a chance. We alluded to the possibility of that. And now it seems like that might be the case. I don't know, though. I just can't pin my finger on it, but I'm just not confident. I really don't think we're going to win.
I think you can pin your finger on it. I think it's all of the injuries.
Possibly. But there is definitely a strong argument that our starting 11 that we put out there will be enough to win the game on paper, because it will have a lot more experience. Liverpool are talking about playing, giving debuts to quite a few players from the start, you know. And it's how they cope in a very, very lively, sold out. The capacity.
The question is, if they do give a bunch of debuts and use players they don't play often, and we go ahead quick or something like that, do they just say, you know what, let's get this dub back, let's throw on Salah, let's throw on Mane or whoever? I don't know.
It depends on if they're even on the bench or if they even travel.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like Salah.
Some of aren't even going to get called up.
It sounds like Salah's going to start and Mane's going to be on the bench. We just know how Liverpool play, and that is to obviously
and remember,
cause problems and hit us on the counter.
They didn't start when we played them the first leg either.
No. But then he came on, and he played great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be tough, because this is the thing, the quality of Premier League academies now, and I don't want to sound like a Prem head, because I don't believe in that. I think it's, you know, the media bias and stuff will make it out as though any Liverpool team could come and beat us. But the quality of Premier League academies now is such that you can drop two or three players in there, and with the quality around them, they don't necessarily stand out as being terrible players or not up to it physically. But we do need to capitalize on the edge that we have with the atmosphere. And we need to make it as hostile as possible, just like they did at Anfield when we crumbled for that first half an hour. And if we do get an early goal, you know, if we do fight like hell and get it, then it's going to be really tough then for Liverpool to, if they have got young lads out there.
As far as the crowd goes, I think there's not going to be as many Liverpool travelers as originally anticipated, just because of the way, you know, COVID shaping up and how that's causing issues for people. But I think it's really going to help us in that aspect. And I think with Zlatan starting, you know, he's going to have that mentality like, this may be my final go at the Champions League. Let's at least get through the group stage. You know, I think he's going to at least give that mental boost. I don't know if his performance is going to be enough, but I think it's going to help. Leao's a big miss for us. And if Teo's gone, then that's real bad too. But is Clues going to start? And Tomori Romagnoli?
The 11 at this moment will be obviously Maignan in goal, Kalulu on the right, Tomori Romagnoli. Teo is still expected to start, like it was precautionary, him not training today. Kessié Tonali is the double pivot, which is our strongest at the moment. I think we'd all agree. It'll be Messias on the right, Brahim down the middle, Krunic on the left, but we know how those all interchange and stuff, and then Ibra up front.
Like that.
Yeah,
I think those middle three are not bad because they're constantly like...
Exactly. It could create confusion, especially for academy kids who aren't used to having to track field, you know, and run around. If they're man marking, I don't know what their defense is going to be like, but if they're man marking, it's going to leave holes because they're going to be running a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, we'd be taking a stab at the moment on how Liverpool are going to line up. But Milan News have the centre back pairing for them as being Gomez and Matip, which Ibra should be able to get the better of both of those. Mm-hmm. You know,
they're slowest.
Yeah, but obviously Konate could play. Yeah, Van Dijk could even play just to make sure they keep Ibra quiet. So we'll see on that front. But I guess all that's left to do is to give a prediction and then pray before we go to bed tonight. So I'll go with them. I think this is going to be an exciting game, an end-to-end game, because they've got nothing to lose and we need to win. So in a way, we don't either. So I'll go with a 2-2 draw, which wouldn't be enough, but
it could be
my gut. It can't.
It could be to win. Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Never mind. Sorry. You know what? Then I'm going to say 2-1 win. I'm just going to roll with it. And when I'm wrong, it is what it is. I'm not going to be like, oh, no.
I'm going to say a 2-0 win.
Keeping a clean sheet would be, you know, regardless of what they've got out there, would be good. Because
I mean, if not the Rashan who can do it against the La Liga champs.
I want that 58 million, man.
Yeah, that'd be so
That's
nice.
A good point.
And by I mean Milan.
Yeah, I was going to say it's been
dire. No, I want it too.
Yeah, right.
That is one thing worth mentioning is obviously we're already up to 40 million-ish. You know, we'll get that in the bank, which is good. But this game is worth somewhere between 15 and 20 million when you take into account the money that you get for passing into the round of 16, but then also the extra ticket revenue and stuff that comes from the first knockout round. So that could be the money that goes towards financing a January signing that we need. That then could go on to win us the league. You know, that's the margins that are at stake here. I'm just happy that we've got to this game with something still to fight for. You know, that in itself is going to make it a memorable atmosphere.
Even if we don't go through, it's been a very memorable group stage.
We've learned a lot with the way
those first legs went with Atletico and Liverpool.
I think we've learned about Porto games taught us a lot. I think those were the ones that we'll come back and say that was the team that we thought, well, we've got to be targeting 4 points at least from those two games, home and away. And that's the team that's put us in the most difficulty. You know, they pressed us so hard. And I think it's been a lesson that in Serie A, it's very rare that you come up against teams that play as intense as you. In the Champions League, they all do. So good luck, you know. Udinese then, I guess, on Saturday night. I'm getting a bit bored of playing on Saturdays. I quite like the Sunday games. I don't know why. I think it's because it has the capacity to ruin your weekend when it's a Saturday like the... It's the Fiorentina game that
really... Are we the early Saturday game again?
No, we're 7:45, which is...
So that's 2:45 for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a bit on Udinese then to start with. Their manager is Luca Gotti, who is probably, I guess, best known for his spells as assistants at other clubs. He was assistant at Chelsea, actually, in 2018-19. He's basically been like a right-hand man for most of his career, but then he's now taken on the Udinese job. And I've watched them a few times this year, actually, and I must say I've been impressed with the way that they play, but they're not getting the results to match it, really. They've only won three times all season. They're currently 14th in the table, but it's very congested in and around the relegation area. That game that they had, though, in the last round against Lazio, where they drew 4-4, was absolutely incredible. It was a fantastic game. The game of the season, probably, in Serie A so far. But, yeah, it's I don't know, I'm just looking down their team here. They've got Pereira, who's the top scorer with 4 goals.
Is De La Feu still
there? He's out. Pereira's out.
Is he?
Yeah.
Good. Good, good, good.
Was De La Feu ever there?
Yeah. Yeah, he was there. But he's not there anymore. Or no, yeah, he is.
Yeah,
he is.
Yeah. So I don't know. It feels like we do have some problems when we play at home against Udinese. There'll be some data to back that up, no doubt, about how we
When I look at the head-to-head, previous 23 matches, it's a really random number, but that's what this app is showing me. We've won 9, drawn 7, and they've won 7. So that's a lot closer than it should be. Last two games were a draw and a win for us. So, I mean, at least somewhat in our favor there, but it hasn't been the easiest go lately, and I don't know why that is. But I think this season will be different because we're a different level, and so are they, and that level's lower for them, and ours is significantly higher than previous years. I think we really got to take this opportunity to run away with it. You know, we're top of the league right now. We realistically should win out the rest of the year, bar the Napoli game. That one will be, you know, a toss-up, but we should be able to get all three here.
Should be able to. See if we actually
Our away form, right. Our away form has obviously been really good. We're undefeated in 31 of our last 34 away games, and yeah, I've just read that from Who Scored. But yeah, obviously we're away from home, which is, I guess, a bit of an added disadvantage, but at the same time, it's not like Udinese are a particularly hostile crowd. I remember it being a bit of a slog last season. It needed that moment of inspiration from Zlatan with the kind of acrobatic edge of the 6-yard box flick over the keeper. And that was a big win at the time. That was a big one to pull out. I watched Udinese against Genoa as well. That was their last home game. I watched it to see how Shevchenko's side obviously got on. They had a lot of a balded Udinese, but they didn't really have anything up top to put the chances away that they generated. They've got a lad up front who's on loan, actually, from some team in Portugal. And I can't remember his name. I think it's Beto, Luis Beto. And he's now on... how many goals for the year? I can't see.
But not anyway, a lot.
But he scored a brace away against Lazio and looked pretty good. So keep an eye on him. And keep an eye on Gerrard because... You know, De La Feu would love to score against his former club. Apart from that, don't have too much else to add on Udinese, so I guess we'll just do a prediction. And I think we'll win 1-0.
I'm going 3-0. I think this will be cakewalk, especially if we pull it out against Liverpool. Then this is just the boys will be riding a high. So, and if they lose, they're going to have extra motivation. So I think no matter what, this is going to be a slam dunk.
I think if we win against Liverpool, this game will be a 1-1 draw. I think if we lose against Liverpool, this will be a 2-0 win.
You think we're going to party hard if we win?
No, I think that Liverpool? I think that they'll underestimate Udinese.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah.
Well, you think
or they'll just be tired.
I think with the Atletico game, where you thought we'd be riding the crest of a wave going into the Sassuolo game, and we put in our worst performance of the season. That's definitely a possibility. Let's hope there is no hangover involved. I just wanted to quickly mention a couple of transfer targets before we do the questions, because obviously we now seem to have two holes to fill in January. Maldini came out and said, as he did a bit of a Galliani-type interview where he said, we're not in the market in January. You know, we plan to do nothing. We're happy with the squad. And that has been spoken about. Stefano's done a video on that interview, which is worth a watch as well. But now there is no choice. Pioli said it himself. He thinks we need to intervene in January to definitely sign a centre-back at least, or to sign a centre-forward. So the centre-back...
Or both.
Both, yeah. The centre-back is an interesting one. So we're either going for a stopgap, who's going to be cover for Kier between now and the end of the season, or we're going to have to bring forward that investment we were likely going to make in a young you know, but still proven centre back that should have come during the summer window. I think it should be the latter. I think now is the best time to bring someone in and sort of blood them into our defensive line, give them some playing time to get up to speed with how we work with the high line and stuff. And there are a couple of names that have been mentioned, a couple of them being in Syria. Nikola Milenkovic has come up again from Fiorentina. He'd be about 15 million euros, it sounds like, which obviously the qualification for the Champions League would cover for the knockout stages. Luis Felipe from Lazio is the one that's got my ears going the most. He's only 24. His contract expires at the end of the season and he is not going to renew. So he would probably arrive on a fairly cost advantageous deal in January. I really like him. He seems to have fallen out of favour a little bit. But when Lazio were good, you know, under Inzaghi, when they were playing their best stuff, he seemed to be a bedrock of that defence. And I like him. I think he would complement Tomori pretty well. And then there's names from abroad. Benoit Bacheldeel has been mentioned a lot from Monaco. He's young. He's 21, I think. And I have not seen anything of him, so I couldn't comment. And then a few other names around, like Samuel Umtiti from Barcelona on loan. Even Yerry Mina got a mention, Maddie. Everton's Yerry Mina.
He's been injured. Honestly, all of Everton's been injured. Don't buy anyone from Everton right now.
Mm. Who do we want, then? Who do we want?
Well, you know who I want.
At center back? Who do we want?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Thiago Jallo.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. We need to talk about how that got manifested into existence by you.
Yeah.
I also
I created all of it.
Yeah, that's
I don't know. It just when Kier was out for the season, I was like, you know, I started with Sven Botman, who's also at Lille, and I was like, he's great idea. He is, but apparently he's been injured because I don't watch Lille. And former academy product Thiago Jallo stepped up, and I looked in his 11 games, he's been killing it. I mean. His who score rating is averaging like a 7.5, which, you know, take the hell you want, but been putting in great performances against every team he's played, bar PSG, and fair enough there. A lot of clean sheets. He's 6'3". He's only 21 years old. He already knows Maignan. He's got that chemistry with him in the back line, so that's immediate help right there. He's been at Milan, and this is a new Milan, so maybe he wants to, you know, return, prove it. I really think that's the move, and I think it'll be the most cost-effective for a long-term solution. And then after I started harping off on this on both Twitter and in our group chat, it became a rumor the next morning. So
it just might be questioned, doesn't it? If that,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, you could question the source there. But
do you want to start putting Haaland into existence?
I tried for a while. It never came through.
Yeah. It actually does make an awful lot of sense, though. Like when we were talking about it on, was it Friday evening? I think it was. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, this does make a lot of sense. We're on good terms with Lille. We can help them out a little bit because obviously the Liao case is going on with the fine that Lille now might have to pay. There are things that can be done on that front. But I also like Botman as a name, probably for a similar reason. But I think he would actually be a very good Kier-esque replacement, like his strengths, etc. And then therefore a long-term option to partner Tomori. That would be a good investment, but it sounds like he will obviously have a pretty heavy price tag as well. Out of all of them, I'll go with Luis Felipe for the reasons that I kind of mentioned before, but it's annoying because there's always something that comes before January and that's all the transfer gossip is related to, when you hear so many names and they just throw them at a wall and hope that one of them sticks, and it'll probably be somebody that we've not heard of yet. But yeah, and then the centre forward is an interesting one because we met on Friday with the agent of two Uruguayan strikers, one being Agustin Jimenez, who's been pretty prolific in Uruguay for Peñarol.
But it was then, Agustin Alvarez.
What did I say?
You said Jimenez. Isn't his last name Alvarez?
His name's something like Agustin Alvarez. Yeah, it is Agustin Alvarez. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And then Darwin Núñez is the agent of him as well from Benfica, who I really like. But I think he would have a pretty big price tag. What do we do? with the striker situation in January? Terminate Pellegrini's loan and buy someone? Is the budget there for that? Is that all going to be diverted to the centre-back position? Do we look at bringing someone in on loan like Luka Jovic? Or
yeah, I think you gotta replace Pellegrini. I mean, he's just simply not reliable. The experiment's failed. Now, whether you go for a permanent third-string player is, I guess, up to you. It doesn't make a difference. He's not going to get a lot of minutes, but if Giroud's getting hurt often like he has been, if he was getting not hurt often like he has been, then he might get a decent shout. So you got to look for someone who has a clean bill of health, has never had an injury record. And I think that's the most important part, more so than their actual ball playing ability, because we simply just need bodies at this point. You know, we can't keep playing Krunic as a false nine, regardless of how well his performances have been. Eventually, it's not going to work out because he's not a striker. He shouldn't be a forward. So you get someone in there, and I don't think we have the budget because we have to get a center back. I mean, we've seen Romagnoli be shaky, and we've seen Gabbia be god-awful. We need someone to cover that hole.
If we got a center back on, like if we actually bought one, then brought back Aldi on his loan and got a loan for a striker, I'd be happy.
You say yeah, Aldi? That... You mean Adley?
Adley, whatever.
Yeah, the supermarket.
Aldi's a supermarket. I was like, wait, I gotta go grocery shopping.
I type Aldi all the time when I'm writing.
I read it as Aldi too, but we all
know. Yeah. That does keep being talked about. I still don't think it happens, but I don't know because he's having a good season. He's definitely having a good season. But it's funny how the priority seems to have shifted from a right winger now. I guess that's because Masias is showing good things also, but it seemed like our only signing was going to be Favre or further. Mm-hmm. And then now it's shifted to we need a striker and a centre-back. It seems to change every month, but I guess that's what injuries do. If Agustin Alvarez was the rumoured 5 million euros that has been mentioned as a price tag in Spain, because I guess Uruguayan clubs are not in a position to demand 20 million plus for their players, then that would be pretty low risk. But obviously, how proven is he? I think Julian Alvarez is still the Alvarez that we should potentially be going for, because his scoring record in big games in Argentina as well, not just, you know, flat track bully, that's still good. And his versatility is such that he can play also in behind the striker. And so he would be an investment. But if that money now has to be diverted to being a centre-back, I wouldn't be surprised if we tried another loan for a striker. Someone like Jovic, which would not be ideal because he himself has had his injury problems, you know. It's very clear that we're working with a limited budget here and we've got to get creative on the market. We'll see what happens. I'm sure we'll know more next week. So some questions then. Christian Espinosa asks, let's say Milan finish fourth in the league and don't advance in the Champions League and don't win the Italian Cup. Would that be considered a successful season? I say yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think going into this, the top four was still the goal. I don't think anyone expected us to really go far in the Champions League, knowing we were going to be in pot four and knowing that unlikely champions were pot one, meaning we were always going to have some big names in pot two this year. I don't think anyone really expected us to make it to the quarterfinals, the round of 16, and definitely not win the thing. So I don't think that's an issue, nor do I think the Coppa Italia was really a priority. Scudetto, you could argue, is a part of it, especially given how the first half of last season went, finishing second, and how this season has begun. You could make an argument that it's a bit of a failure, but I don't think ultimately the goal was to win the Scudetto. I think it was just top four. So if we get top four, then goal achieved. Anything else is a big, big extra.
This is a cop-out answer, but I guess there are varying degrees of success. I think the bare minimum of success would be to qualify for the Champions League because we need that money and we need to be in that competition again. But then the addition to that is a top four finish and to win a trophy, whatever it may be. We've been trophy starved and we don't want finishing top four to be the thing that we hold up at the end of the season and say, look at how good we are. So that's my answer to the question. But in that scenario, I'm going to say from the position that we're in now, it will feel a little bit disappointing. You know, that's what I said last season when we crashed out of the Europa League, when we did, we kind of put our eggs in that basket of, well, we can't win the Scudetto anymore because we've tailed off. We need to kind of go on a run here somewhere, because we might not even get top four at this rate. And then we crashed out to United despite having played better over both legs. And it's like, we're going to come away from another season feeling pretty disappointed. And then in the end, we snuck in the last game of the season. So it saved it a bit.
Yeah, I think that big picture, like in 5 years, we won't think back to this season like, fuck, we didn't win a trophy. Because if we're still in Champions League in 5 years and finally investing, then the plan has worked, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Funnily enough,
if we do win a trophy, it'll be fucking amazing. But, you know, you got to have a slow growth. Quick growth works, but it only works if it works every season.
Yeah. And you have a lot of money that you can waste by getting your signings wrong, you know. Funnily enough, the Liverpool model is what has been alluded to quite a few times, because they were obviously stuck in and around the Europa League places in the Premier League, and then they got Klopp and everything changed. They got smarter with recruitment and stuff, and they're obviously our opponents now in the Champions League, and if we beat them tomorrow, it'll be kind of like things are coming full circle.
Yeah, well, and remember, Klopp's been there for a while. You know, he didn't just come in and have immediate Champions League and league success. It took a few seasons. This is his fifth or sixth, maybe even seventh year. I don't remember when he went there, but it's been there a while. And it's only been 3 or 4 years that they've actually been top level. You know, it took a while. So, yeah, that's absolutely the mold. You know, they were making small name investments. Now, they had the big Coutinho sell for 9 figures. So that definitely was a big.
We've had a no-bake sell.
That's true, yeah.
We've had a lot of big walk-offs, yeah. So. That makes a difference, but I mean, we're still on the same path, I think.
Yeah, they also didn't spend the Coutinho money particularly wisely at the time.
No. They also got Salah, you know, like that was...
They've been smart in certain things, but you know, when you've got 80 million, well, 60 million to throw at players, then like they did with Alisson and like they did with Van Dijk, that is going to transform your team. There's no two ways about it. Question from Giovanni Milano asks, will the massive big chances that we've missed in recent games affect us going into tomorrow's match? We've been creating a boatload of chances, but have been able to convert them against lesser opponents. This is a psychology thing, I think. It's always better to go into a game when you've got forward players who are tucking away most of the chances that they get. There's no two ways about it, because against Liverpool, we might get two or three big chances in the game. And you want them to fall to players that you know are going to bury them. That's why Rebic was so useful in that first game, because he got the one chance that we generated in the entire first half and he scored it. And that gave us the confidence. Brahim Diaz, you know, he missed a couple in the last game. But then the other part of my brain says law of averages. If you keep giving these players chances, eventually they're going to put one in. And what better stage to do it than tomorrow night?
I think we know what we need to practice today. You know, I think scoring, finishing drills, that's what we were drilling, because we already know the other stuff. We know what needs to be done. Now let's execute it. So, yeah, practicing goals today.
Yeah. Kareem, this is quite a funny one. We shouldn't do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Milan injury bingo. Which player, what sort of injury and for how long? Now, this is cynical, but I said it in a tweet, so I'm going to have to repeat it. I think Tonali's going to be the next to go, just because he's on that list of six. Perhaps by saying it, I'm going to reverse jinx it. I don't know.
No, you just fucked us.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, I'm going to say that he'll be out for... I don't even know. He'll be out for a month with a hamstring tweak or something. It feels like that. He's played in every game this season.
As long as it's not the month of February or January, whenever those guys go.
Yeah,
for AFCON, jeez. Yeah, I'm going to – I mean, I hope no one gets injured, but knowing that we will absolutely have another injury really soon, I really hope it's someone like Conte who's just not going to get a minute. Yeah. You know?
really hope it's him.
Well, I really hope if we get an injury that it's a – expendable player. That sounds awful. I hate this game. Let's not do this.
Yeah, let's move on.
Can we? Yeah, face.
Let's move on. Lorenzo Raffini asks, with the renewal of Ibrahimovic seemingly likely, what salary or with what conditions would you agree to an extension? Or is it simply that continue as they are as long as both parties benefit? Definitely, we've talked about this a little bit before, but definitely lower the fixed amount and raise the bonuses achievable. That seems to make sense because, you know, he's going to be firmly into his 40s by the time we enter next season. I think it's going to happen. I just really think he's going to renew. The only thing that might change things is if they cancel the tax relief thing, which is being talked about, because he no longer has to be there. He doesn't have to have his tax residence there anymore. So he might decide to go and do one final year in his career at Hammarby or something like that, the club where he has a share.
He does.
I
think he'd rather go out at a top flight club. I think his ego's too big to be like, I'm going to retire the small team.
He's going to go to Hammarby, play amazing, and be like, let's go back to Milan, you know?
Right. I mean, he went to America thinking, all right, my career's done. And then he's like, actually, I'm a baller. Let's go back.
That is the MLS, though. You know, it is Disney.
Yeah, that's not really. Hammarby.
I mean, it's translated very well.
It's done okay for us. He used it as a rehab thing, didn't he, really, for his ACL, let's be honest. And it did work out well. Another thing that we must consider, I suppose, is whether Sweden make the World Cup or not, because that seems to be the last big stage that he wants to conquer, is to play at another World Cup. If they don't get there, then he might, if he were to have another injury, then he might think, is this really worth it, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think he stays. You say that about his ego, and it's true. We know what he's like. He's a very proud individual. But every interview that he gives at the moment is gushing about Milan, you know, about how much he loves it here and how much he wants to stay. And fair play for that. I will say that. That might be it for questions, I think. Oh, no, we'll ask one more. Bart Jello, considering all the performances since the beginning of the season, which midfield partnership is strongest?
We kind of touched on it. Yeah, Kessie Finale. That's the one. Benacer's been hot or cold because of injuries and illness. And, you know, it is what it is. Especially COVID. Like, you can't blame anyone for it.
He's got receipts of good performances. Yeah. So we know that he can get that.
Exactly. And Bakayoko's kind of struggled. Granted, he hasn't played much and he's getting back to fitness. He hasn't played much anywhere, really, since he left us the first time. So, you know, he needs his time, but maybe he'll get back into it. He was a killer that second half of his first season with us. So
I think he actually looked decent on Saturday afternoon. I'll give him that. He had that one thing where he pressed really high up and he won the ball back and he curled the ball around the back of the defense and Brahim Diaz should have scored at the far post.
Yes.
And he put it into the side netting. That was a good bit of play. And I just hope little things like that in games give him confidence because, you know, giving the ball away cheaply is going to have the adverse effect.
Yeah.
That's it. I said it'd be over an hour, and it's just snuck over an hour. But thank you to everyone if you made it this far. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, which is
now on
the screen now. AJ, thank you.
Yeah, it's over 45. Been fun, and we'll be recapping two dubs next week.
Would love that. Maddie?
I like the confidence. Edward_Toth.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Enter the giveaway if you haven't already for a signed Sandro Tonali shirt, which actually ends sometime around when this will be uploaded. So if you listen to it in time, then good luck. And like, comment, subscribe to the channel. That always helps. And thank you for listening. We'll catch you in a week's time.
Eccolo Ante in area di rigore, Ante Ibra, gol! Vediamo se è buono, ce lo dà buono, ce lo...